Welcome to another episode of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm back. I'm your host, Callan Elslinger. And you know what? We have the whole crew back together. I'm joined by Rick and Jake. Guys, it's good to be back. It's been a few weeks since we've all been together. I thought you guys would get tired of me.
Yeah, it's good to be back in full strength after a few weeks and have everyone here together to talk some relievers.
For sure. It's definitely a different dynamic when there's only two of us. So I'm glad we got the whole crew back together. And despite the news sort of being short in general for relievers, I think we still got a lot to talk about in the relief pitcher world.
We definitely do. And on this episode, we decided since the three of us are back together, why not have some controversy? Why not have some debate? We're going to be power ranking bullpens, or at least Jake and Rick and I. I'm just going to be the moderator and sit back and tell them why they are both wrong. But we'll save that for the later part of the segment. We'll do the usual. We'll get our risers and fallers of the ranks. We'll dive into getting some mailbag at the end of the season. And as usual, start off with the news. So let's get right into it. We'll start off with some of the injuries. No major injuries, which has been nice. We're getting some guys off the IL, which we'll get to in just a little bit, but just the guys who are going on the IL. I'm just going to run through the five or six of them, and we'll go through the fantasy impact of them if there's any. Michael Givens, Amir Garrett, Matt Barnes, Phil Bickford, Trevor Gott, and Josh Stalmont were all placed on the IL for their respective teams in the past week. So, Rick, let's start with you. I know none of these guys have the quote-unquote closer's job, but what impact do they have in terms of holds? Does anybody, you know, become a little bit more intriguing for a, you know, a saves plus holds league because of that, or kind of walk through the impact for some of these?
Not much of an impact. I think Trevor Gott was interesting earlier in the year. He kind of was getting some high leverage work in Seattle when they had some injuries, but now if you know they're kind of back to full health minus him. Stalmont was kind of a little bit, he was on the back end of my holds rankings. He was, you know, starting to pitch well again. It's been a while since we saw him, you know, kind of be a factor. So it kind of hurts to see him go back on the IL, unfortunately. But, yeah, I don't think there's much of a fantasy impact from any of these injuries.
Yeah. They're sort of just outside of that high leverage work. They're either the second or third, guy up for holds, and none of them are in the saves conversation. So mostly just deep leagues that use holds, these guys are relevant in, and I wouldn't say that they're going to be difficult to replace.
Easy enough. I think the bigger fantasy impact comes from some of the transactions from the past week. We have a couple guys who are coming off the IL who we know have the fantasy impact. So we'll start out in Miami. AJ Puck was activated from the 15-day IL from his left elbow nerve irritation. Jake, do you think he jumps right back in as the guy you want to roster in Miami?
Yeah, definitely. We saw a stretch of Dylan Floro doing pretty well that sort of raised the question of whether or not Puck would take that role when he got back, but then Floro sort of faltered last week, and I think now that he's got a 4.21 ERA, that I think it's pretty clear Puck's going to take over that role. He didn't close yesterday, but I that wouldn't really worry me too much. I think he's going to be the clear guy there, especially because they have other lefties in that bullpen that are really good, like Tanner Scott and Steven Okert, that can cover the lefty heavy innings prior to the ninth.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree. Yeah. I think Puck's going to be the guy. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week, how I was starting to get a little worried because Floro was pitching so well and then kind of had a little bit of a road bump and, you know, hit a speed bump. And yeah, I think Puck's clearly going to be right back into the role for them.
Rick, we'll go over to you for the next one. Andres Munoz was activated from 15-day IL for Seattle Mariners after his right deltoid strain. We've talked about this throughout the season, what impact he could have for the Seattle bullpen. We know Seawald's been pretty good so far this year. What sort of mix do you expect in Seattle, or do you think there's still one guy that's the guy you want in Seattle?
Yeah, I still think Seawald's going to get the bulk of the saves. He's still getting some weird usage from time to time on just coming into the seventh inning down run. It's not true closer, you know, usage. So I think if you're in a league where, you know, 20 to 30 relievers are rostered typically, I think Munoz has to be one of those top 30 for sure. you know, he's at least going to, and if you're in a league that counts, you know, anything sort of like, you know, strikeout K per nine or something like that, you definitely want Munoz. He looked good the other night in his first game back. But yeah, I don't see a ton of saves coming his way occasionally, but I still think Seawald's, he's earned, at least earned the shot at, you know, getting the bulk of the saves there.
For sure. Munoz is somewhat interesting. I feel like there's this perception around him that last year he was more so in the closer conversation than he actually was, right? Because there was this idea that, like, oh, it was like 50-50 Seawald Munoz, sort of in the same vein that, like, I think Yoan Duran and Jorge Lopez were in the second half last year. But if you look at the numbers, Munoz had 4 saves to Seawald's 20. So it was pretty clear who was the closer last year. And so I don't think he's going to factor into that closer role as much as you'd think, just considering how people hold Munoz in their mind. He's definitely one of the best relievers in baseball, but his fantasy relevance in different leagues definitely is super dependent on his role, which is usually the case for most relievers. But I think he's going to be a guy that should be rostered in the majority of leagues, like Rick was saying, just super elite in the strikeout department, which usually leads to great ratios. He's pitching for a good team with a good pitching development department. And so I think everything's going to be good there, but I wouldn't think that this is going to be a guy that ends the season with 10 or more saves.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think Seawald's been that good. And we kind of, all three of us, had Seawald, at least it's preseason, higher in terms of prioritizing in terms of drafts. So it's nice to see that playing out there. Like you said, Munoz, you roster him. You want him, especially in a rotisserie league. He's going to be good for ratios, strikeouts, all that stuff. You just can't rely on him fully for the saves yet. But who knows how things will play out. Next one, Jose Alvarado is going to be activated from the IL on Friday with left elbow inflammation. Philadelphia, it seems like every week we have something we need to talk about with them. Craig Kimbrell has been pitching pretty well of late, except as we record this, he just blew a tie game in the ninth, so maybe that makes him likely to lose his job when Alvarado comes back. But what do you guys think when Alvarado gets back? Does he go right back to the closer role, or is there another great mix in Philadelphia?
Well, it's definitely not good timing for Kimbrell to be blowing saves. I think it's similar. Kimbrell's been pitching up until today, at least. Kimbrell's been pitching pretty lights out in the closer role, and we know his track record, you know, suggests that he's better off, you know, serving that one inning, ninth inning, you know, being that closer. That's when he's pitched his best. So I wonder if Alvarado comes back and just into more of a setup role. I think if you're looking at him and Munoz coming back at the same time, I think those guys should both be rostered in pretty much any standard 12 team league, mixed league. I would put Alvarado ahead of Munoz. I think he would be one, Munoz two, as far as priority goes. But just because Kimbrell is going to be a little bit more volatile than I think Seawald will be, and I, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. They haven't said anything about it because it was, you know, I wasn't sure when, you know, a different situation, but when Pete Fairbanks came back and Jason Adam was pitching well, I thought they would, you know, keep Adam in the role, and they went back to Fairbanks. So you never know what they're going to do here. But long story short, yeah, I'm rostering Alvarado, and I'm going to see what happens because we know the elite upside that he brings. He's, you know, was top three in strikeouts and didn't walk anyone this year. All of a sudden he's not walking people. I mean, he's just potentially the best reliever in baseball when healthy. So worth the speculative ad pretty much in all leagues, and then just see how things play out from here.
Yeah, I think this is one that's going to be really interesting to watch because with all of Rick's points about Kimbrell being better as a closer in general and Alvarado sort of looking like one of, if not the best reliever in baseball before the injury, it's going to be really interesting to see how the Phillies manager goes about this. Looking into Kimbrell's numbers since Alvarado's been gone, he's been incredible. If you look at since the day that he hit the IL, he's tossed 11 innings. During that time, he has 6 saves. He struck out 19 batters to just 2 walks, and he's allowed 2 runs, both of which have come on solo home runs. So he's got a 1.64 ERA. He's got a strikeout rate of almost 49%. And even today's blown save was sort of unlucky. It came with an error on himself on a pickoff throw that resulted in an unearned run scoring. He walked a couple batters in that one too, but I think there was definitely you can't blame it all on his pitching there. You can blame it on his arm, but not the pitching itself. But he's been really good in this closer role. And I think the way that most managers like to manage is they like to have a guy that they can use whenever they want it. And we saw that with Alvarado, even when Kimbrel was struggling earlier in the season, that they didn't mind using him as often as possible whenever they could. And sometimes that meant not in the ninth inning. So I think we could see that. I think it's going to be fewer save opportunities for Kimbrel, but I think they're both going to factor into it, with sort of Alvarado filling not only the high leverage fireman role, but just like, we want to use him as often as possible. If we get to a game where we're up by three in the ninth inning and we haven't really faced a high leverage situation, and this is usually where you'd use Kimbrel, we might as well use Alvarado because that's a better shot at like closing out the games. So it's going to be really interesting to watch. But like you said, I think Alvarado should be owned in pretty much every league. I think he's even better than Andrés Muñoz right now, but it'll be interesting to see if he has the same stuff that he had prior to the injury.
Once again, I agree with you guys. You keep them both. I don't think you drop Kimbrel right away. Alvarado may get the majority of the saves, but Kimbrel's been, like you said, pretty lights out in terms of as closing for the Phillies lately outside of this last outing. So you want to keep him on your rosters. He'll still factor in. If I'm predicting it, maybe I'm seeing it as a 55-45, 60-40 split in Alvarado's favor. That's not enough to drop Kimbrel, especially in your deeper leaves where you need saves. So it'll be very, very fun to watch moving forward. The last two bits of news are, interesting. It's some head risers. Robert Stevenson traded to the Tampa Bay Rays. We had a joke in our group chat as soon as that happened that Robert Stevenson will ultimately lead the Tampa Bay Rays and saves the rest of the season. Maybe it'll happen. You never know if Kevin Cash. And Jonathan Hernandez was optioned to the minors for Texas Rangers. That was a fun week or two at the beginning of the season or in preseason. We thought that maybe he'd factor in with Jose Leclerc for saves, but hopefully he can get himself going there. Any fantasy impact for those two moves?
Yeah, I mean, the Stevenson ones definitely caught my attention because he's kind of been a one of those names that always pops up on leaderboards for certain X stats. And it's like, all right, well, the ERA is not lining up with these numbers. So just kind of waiting for the breakout. He hasn't really been on a team that develops pitching like the Rays yet. So this could be finally the breakout we've been waiting for in Stevenson. He already has two holds in three games with the Rays. So they're not shying away from using him in high leverage work yet right now. So with kind of a thin bullpen there with Adam and Fairbanks either hurt or struggling here, he could definitely work his way into a that wouldn't be crazy to say he works his way into a safe situation at some point.
Yeah, I'll echo those sentiments on Stevenson being the more interesting of those two moves. I think it's sort of cool how the Rays will be like, they'll have an assessment of a player and they're just like, well, that's who we think he is. We're going to use him. It's just like they bring a guy in like Robert Stevenson, who's got a 5 ERA, and they're like, well, we think he's like a high leverage reliever. We're going to use him as such. And then they sort of just perform to that, or they falter and then they're gone. But I think Stevenson in general, he's a big slider guy. He's got one of the best sliders in baseball. It's got a 44.7% CSW, which is in the 97th percentile. PLV doesn't like it as much, but that's okay. That slider's been really good. And that sort of reminds me of like Matt Whistler a little bit. We saw sort of what he did with the Rays, being a majority slider guy. So that should be interesting. And his fastball's not bad either. He throws upper 90s. He averages like 97 with that pitch. So I think he could actually be really good. I liked him a lot when he was with the Reds. He came up as like a top starting pitching prospect. Yeah. So it's been interesting to see him sort of transform from that, but he's always interest me even when he was in Colorado, to be completely honest, but we'll see what can happen here. I'm glad that a guy that I've been interested outside of pitching for the Rays is now pitching for the Rays, because now he's got that ability to sort of take off. So that'll be fun to watch. Also, he's from his hometown on pitcher list is where I work.
Oh, look at that.
Well, we got more reason to root for him at this point. I would agree. But there's always something when you move, you go to Tampa Bay as a pitcher that gets you intrigued. And without Pete Fairbanks around, unfortunately, RIP, it's going to be interesting. I think there's definitely something if he's available in a holds league. You put him on a watch list or maybe speculate on him. He's going to be used, like I said, in that high leverage situation. And the Rays will find a way to turn him into a lights out reliever because that's what they always do. On to the three up, three down. This past week has had some interesting shakes and turns in the Rick's ranks, so we want to go through some of the largest risers and fallers from the week. So, Rick, why don't you kick it off? Who's one of your biggest risers over the past week?
Yeah, so I'll go with Scott Barlow. I think, you know, he really got off to a shaky start at the beginning. I remember us talking about him losing his job like second week of the year. We're like, all right, it's Aroldis Chapman. It's just a matter of when. At this point, and to Barlow's credit, he has really turned things around in a big way. So, you know, now there's been a lot of talk, and I guess this is probably worth discussing with the, you know, I think it's one of our mailbag questions about him being on the trade block along with Chapman as well. So that's something to look out for. But, you know, it might not necessarily be a bad thing if Barlow gets traded, because there's definitely teams out there that could use someone with closer experience who, you know, I think he would be the closer in a lot of team, you know, Dodgers, Rangers, Yankees, Angels, Mets, Diamondbacks, Cubs, to name a few. You know, those teams could probably use him, would use him as a closer. So, you know, I really think that this is going to be the year he gets moved. It's been a lot of speculation. I think the last 3 years we've been speculating him being traded. I think this is about the time for the Royals to make that move. So, as long as he's still in Kansas City, I know he only has two saves in May, which is, you know, obviously bad, and that's not helping you in the saves department, but everything else, you know, K rates have been going up despite his velocity going down a little bit, and the ratios are definitely not hurting you. So, still someone you want to hold on to. I know it's going to be frustrating that the saves are going to be inconsistent, but you know, just see how things play out with him this year, because he could end up in a really good situation.
Yeah, it's good to see him bounce back. I know early on he was struggling so much that we were sort of just counting the days until Aroldis Chapman took over, but good to see him get back on track. I think he and Chapman probably have a 75% chance or more to get traded this year. I think Barlow could get a pretty solid return with still like a couple years of control left. So that'll be interesting to watch. He's definitely the closer right now. I think it does raise the question though, like with him getting back on track and solidifying himself as the closer throughout the first 2 months. And now the trade deadline on the horizon in about 2 months, less than 2 months. Is this a good time to sell high, or is this when you want to like hold on to him and then, I don't know, wait until the last second? Because it's sort of, I don't know, I feel like if you have smart people in your league, you get to July and then people are like, oh yeah, the trade deadline. Oh yeah, that guy's going to get traded, like red flag on him. But right now, people don't really have that idea of him being a red flag heading into July.
Yeah, he's going to be interesting. We'll get into it, like I said, in the mailbag a little bit later in the show. Who are some names to monitor in KC as the next guys up after ultimately Barlow and Chapman lose their jobs? But if you Rick moved him up to 12th and his rank is right about where he was being drafted, so it's nice to see him get back to what we kind of thought he would be at the beginning of the season. Hopefully he can get some more saves, boost that value before he ultimately goes to another contender where he may take over as closer, may not, but it'll be a great name to watch. But it's nice to see him starting to turn things around. Jake, more to you. Who is one of your biggest risers from the past week?
I'm going to go with my guy, Camilo Duvall. Finally, Giants closer getting some recognition. He's been absolutely incredible this year, increasing his strikeout rate, just basically doing everything that we had hoped he would when he broke into the league and displayed his electric fastball. And it's also come with him increasing his slider usage, which is pretty interesting. Actually decreasing it, excuse me. But the slider has become more effective, which is good to see. It's now in the 88th percentile, 38% CSW. So that's sort of been his carrying pitch, which is interesting considering that this is a guy that throws 100 miles per hour on the regular. But he's been great this year. He's tied for second in the majors in saves. He's leading the National League. He's getting a ton of ground ball, swinging strikes. He's keeping his ERA down. I think in May, he's got a ERA of 1.15. So that's pretty incredible to see what he's been doing. I don't really expect it to stop. I mean, obviously this level of like a low two ERA is difficult for any pitcher to keep up, and his xFIP is at 2.53. So there is a little wiggle room for him to fall back down, but I think he's clearly cementing himself as one of the best relievers in baseball. And if the Giants just continue to play like 500 ball, which is what they've done recently, then I think he should be a top 10 reliever for the rest of the season.
He's going to be that guy this year. I feel like there's one closer every year that's on like a 500 team that like every win though is like a 2 or 3 run league win. And he's just going to rack up a ton of saves. And yeah, he's already leading the NL in saves after having like 3 saves in April. He's turning into an elite reliever with just a little bit of a small pitch mix change, and you know, love to see the 37% K rate. Even though his fastball hits 100, it's really that slider that's, you know, the big swing and miss pitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely been great, and like I said, he vaulted into Rick's top 10 over the past week. Saves are going to be there. Giants are going to be playing close games throughout the season. We thought Taylor Rogers was going to be in some sort of mix after he signed, and that hasn't exactly panned out how people might have thought it'd be. But Camilo Duvall's been great. He's vaulting some conversation, and I feel like we may be talking about him next season, so long as things stay the same, as in that, you know, second sort of tier of closers, someone you know, we've drafted pretty early in terms of closers in 2024. But if you haven't this year, enjoy it. He's been extremely dominant, and I don't fully expect that to stop. And I'll wrap up with Jason Adam as a riser. We talked about him a little bit with the Rays news, but he's got 3 saves in the past week. Pete Fairbanks still on the IL. I'm back in the buying in on the fact that once Pete Fairbanks returns, it's not exactly a guarantee that Fairbanks takes a job. It's now a second stint on the IL. As much as we love Pete Fairbanks, how many stints on the IL can he have before they decide, you know, maybe we shouldn't just throw him right back into the high leverage closer situation? Maybe they ease him back in or put him as a setup man to get the ball to Adam. But he's looked really good. Strikeouts are there. The Rays are a very good team. As long as he remains the closer and is the guy out there, he's pretty close to a top 15, top 10 closer right now for fantasy. So a lot to like if you were able to pick up Jason Adam over the past week or two.
Yeah, I think Adam is definitely someone that should be rostered at this point. Even when Fairbanks comes back, don't go, you know, dropping him just yet. Especially with Fairbanks' injury history, I think Adam, if you've picked up Adam, I think he's, you know, someone that could be a mainstay in your bullpen the rest of the way. It's been a little rocky recently, but he, you know, I still think you're sticking with him, especially with this Rays team, how good they are. And it's just nice to see some consistency from Kevin Cash in the ninth inning. No matter if it's Fairbanks or Adam, he's typically turned to one of those two in the ninth this year.
I don't have anything to say about Adam, but I would like to add in a little addendum of Emmanuel Clase, who's been looking like old Emmanuel Clase again, finally. He's striking out batters, which is the thing that concerned us for like a month and a half. He hadn't struck out 2 batters since April 10th. And not only has he done that in each of his last 3 appearances, but he's done it in 4 of his last 6 as well. He's in his last 7 innings, he struck out 11 batters, which is 2 walks and 1 earned run allowed. He's looking like Class A again. I think his velocity's back as well, up into the classic 99 mile per hour range for him. So I have a lot more confidence that he's back to normal.
Yeah, it's been good to see, but he started to look like his normal self. I expect him to probably get back into that top 3 or so by the end of the season. He's been very good, and the Cleveland, you know, is going to be playing some close games. But as usual, when risers rise, there's going to be some fallers. So over the past week, Rick, who's been one of your biggest fallers in terms of your ranks?
I guess I'll go with about the hometown guy and Kenley Jansen for me. I really don't know what to make of the situation, because he does have 12 saves. He has a 3.86 ERA. That's not bad. Obviously, a tight grip on the closer role here. There's no competition. But he does. This is coming with a 1.61 whip, which is worse among closers. You know, a 29.2% CSW rate's not great. 14% walk rate's not good. 5.56 xFIP is horrible. So I'm not sure. You know, I know he's always kind of outperformed some of his expected stats. So I'm not expecting him to finish the year with a 5.5 ERA, but. There's definitely concern, and he, you know, his ground ball rate's down to a, I think it's a career low, 25%, which is, you know, not exactly ideal when you pitch in the AL East, and you know, you might get away with that in some other places, but if with, you know, pitching in Fenway half the time, and then, you know, either in Tampa, Toronto, New York, I mean, not exactly hitter friendly or not exactly pitcher friendly environment. So, he's been fine so far, but I do have concerns, and it's always like the velocity is just fluctuating so much from outing to outing too. That's another thing that's, you know, you don't really know what you're getting from him each outing.
Jake, anything you want to add with McKinley?
That ground ball rate has got to be like the lowest in baseball right now. That is super low. I can't help but think of that that meme from Avengers Endgame, which I have never seen the movie, but I know the meme of Thanos of like, what did it cost? Everything. That one outing when he got his 400th save, and then he was throwing like 99 miles per hour. What did it cost to do that? Everything. Yeah. I wouldn't say he's forgotten how to pitch, but you do have to put a lot of things in a factor here. Like, not only is he getting older, but also like, When you're that age and you're dealing with physical ailments that he's dealt with throughout this season and seasons in the past, and also have the pitch clock as a factor, I think you could get an idea that he would sort of break down faster. I think over the course of a season, I think relievers in general, they start off really hot because their arms are as fresh as they'll be all season, and then they can sort of fall off as the season goes, as they get that season long fatigue, rather than you don't really see it in their outings like you do with starters, but they don't really have that same stamina throughout the whole season. So that's something to watch. I mean, you mentioned his xFIP being like well above 5. xFIP is something, is a ERA estimator that makes home runs per 9 sort of come to the, regress to the mean. Right now, his home runs per 9 is 0.46. And like you said, he's given up no ground balls. It's all fly balls right now. So his 3.4% home run to fly ball rate is due to come to the relief pitcher MLB average of like 14%. So that's like a 10 to 11 point jump. So I could definitely see some of those fly balls that he's given up start to leave the yard, which would be less than ideal.
With the increased walks
as well, like that's just going to be, those are going to be like multi-run home runs.
Exactly. You know, a walk and a home run, and then, you know, there's a blown save. But it's, so I pulled that 25% ground ball rate from our player profile page. If you look at Baseball Savant, it's actually 20%. So I don't even, yikes. I mean, oof. I don't know what the difference is, honestly, but, 20, yeah, that's going to lead to some home runs in the future.
Yeah, especially in a park like Fenway that we know is fairly hitter friendly. Even if it's not home runs, it's balls off the monster that will ultimately lead to some runs. So, you know, it was fun to watch Kenley, and I hope he's able to turn things around. But there's definitely said some warning signs going there. Jake, move over to you. Who is one of your biggest fallers from the past week?
I mean, we talked about it before we hit the show, but Ryan Helsley has been falling down Rick's ranks for quite a while. He's now down to 26, which is crazy. I don't think that is anybody.
I think I'm being too harsh. I might be being a little too harsh. But yeah.
Okay. Well, even still, he's fallen. He's way down the ranks. I mean, this was a guy who was like a top 10 closer coming into the season. So anything outside of the top 15 would be sort of drastic for our preseason expectations. And we've talked about him extensively, I think, over the past month or so, just about his role being uncertain, which is something we expected with Giovanni Gallegos there and the way that they used him last year, just in terms of limiting his usage and not using him on back-to-back days and having another elite reliever there that can sort of fill in whenever you need him. But he's not been the same guy he was last year. He doesn't have the same strikeout ability, the same swing and miss stuff. I think the book is out on him, and it's been not great for him because he's become less effective. And I think all of that sort of makes a big soup of unappealing relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Especially with Giovanni Gallegos pitching as well as he has, that mix is going to be very tough to try and predict in St. Louis. So I would agree with you. I think Pelsley's got another one, a lot of warning signs we've been talking about, but this is another week where it just really, really came to a halt or whatever.
Yeah. If you're going to he's been pitching okay. He's been good this year, but if you're going to only have three saves every month, I need either elite strikeout rates or ratios or something. And he's just been good. He hasn't been like elite like he was last year. He pitched well the other night though, and he finally picked up another save last night, two strikeouts. Maybe it's a sign of things to come. Who knows?
Yeah, for me, the faller for this week is Evan Phillips. His last three outings from this past week, only went two innings, gave up three runs, three hits, only struck out one batter, walked one, took two losses, one against the Yankees, one against Cincinnati. And we're also getting the news that Daniel Hudson is continuing through his rehab and could be making a return in the near future, and that's going to make the Dodgers closer situation a lot more ugly. I wonder if Hudson will jump right back in. Do they go with Phillips, or do they give Jake some more lightning and maybe give Bruce Arcaro a few shots? But it's going to become more of a committee than we would like, and for all those reasons, Phillips has to be falling down in the ranks.
I wouldn't really mind if they just didn't have games to save. That'd be fine with me.
Yeah, okay. A little biased, but
true.
It's been super frustrating with him again. Just another like where are the saves? Like Dave Roberts, you know, he's got three holds, four holds since his. I'm trying to find when his last save was May 12th, where he had a string of five saves in a row from April 30th to May 12th, and since then no saves but four holds and a win. So he's technically is still the closer, but I don't think Dave Roberts I think he wants to use him in the seventh and eighth inning. So that's Daniel Hudson. It's a good I'm glad you brought him up, because that's going to be a name. I think the veteran, you know, that could be the guy that Dave Roberts turns to as like the closer, while using guys like Gratterall, Ferguson, and Phillips earlier in games.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see an influx of talent in this bullpen throughout the whole second half of the season with, like you said, Daniel Hudson, but also they have like Alex Reyes and JP Fireisen and Blake Treinen. So I think there's going to be a lot of hands in the mix there. Bruce Gratterall has been really good as well. 2.03 ERA. He's not striking out guys like we thought he might. And Caleb Ferguson has been pretty successful as well. So I think there's going to be options there. And like Rick said, they want to use Evan Phillips as a high leverage guy because he is clearly the best current reliever on their team. But yeah, that's crazy. It's been almost a month since his last save. That's definitely reason enough to move down at least a couple of spots in the rankings.
I would agree. And so we'll take a quick break. When we get back, it's time for debate. We've been very agreeable over this first half hour or so of this episode. That's about to change. We're going to take a look at Rick and Jake. They power ranked the top 10 bullpens in the MLB. And it's time to see who is right. So we'll get into that, get into some mailbag, all that more on In the Pen. All right, it's time for the power rankings we decided with us back. Let's get a little competition going on. Let's see who we value in terms of the best bullpens in all of Major League Baseball. So Rick, since you're our quote unquote bullpen expert, you do the weekly rankings. We'll let you start us off. Give me, start to go through your list. Guys, teams you like, teams you don't like, teams, and then we'll get to Jake and see where he differs.
It looks like we have the same top three. So being unanimous there, I think we'll start. We both had Houston. I mean, the Astros number one. I think that's, I'm not even sure there's really much of a debate there right now. I think just, with their top three or four guys, it's clearly the best unit in baseball, with Ryan Pressly, Brian Abreu, Hector Neris, and Phil Maton. I'm pronouncing that right.
I think it's Maton.
Matt Maton. anyway, that group, and even, I mean, that's without Rafael Montero, who entering the season, you know, just signed a big extension as far as relievers go. So if they can get him going, if they can get Ryan Stanek going, I mean, there's other pieces there too. And yeah, it's that bullpen is just super deep, and one of their strengths. It's you know, Ryan Presley's, it's good to see him pitching well again. I think I have no more concerns really with him. And we know how good Abreu is. So those two alone, and then you factor in, you know, Neris and Matone. That's a pretty good group there.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think they're the front runners in baseball right now. I wouldn't say they're like, they're far and away the best relief pitching core in baseball, especially because Montero and Ryan Stanek sort of aren't at the level they were last year. But if those guys were there, I think it would be pretty clear that they would be sort of far and away that first best team. But just the fact that they have a guy like Brian Abreu as the setup guy, and there's not really any qualms about that, I think sort of suggests that, you know, that 1-2-3 at the top is pretty incredible, and they do have some very solid depth.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that. They've been that good, and there's a reason the Astros are always in the World Series and in the ALCS and the best team in the American League. Part of it is that bullpen, among many, many other things. So let's continue on. You said the number 2 and 3 were both agreeable. I'll just read off it. The Baltimore Orioles and Atlanta Braves. Anything we want to add about those guys? Or, you know, we know they're very, very good. We mentioned them a lot.
Yeah, so Atlanta, you know, we talked about earlier in the year, we kind of had high hopes and expectations for them, that this shouldn't be much of a surprise. But Baltimore, you know, we knew Batista was going to be good coming into the season. We weren't concerned about him having a second year, you know, kind of fall off. But, you know, seeing the way Cano has, you know, established himself as one of the better setup men in baseball, they've got help from Brian Baker, Danny Coulombe. I pronounce that right. I'm gonna be butchering names left and right tonight. but yeah, some interesting names that have kind of come up from out of nowhere. And you know, last year they had a lot of help from Keegan Aiken and Dylan Tate, guys who really haven't helped them out this year. So it's they've really been able to piece it together while other guys have been hurt or, you know, struggling. So I just think that 1-2 combination of Cano and Batista is probably the best in the game right now.
Yeah, it's really interesting that they can be this high in the rankings without having really any household names outside of Batista and Cano. And Cano really wasn't a household name until the past month or so. So it's interesting to see them be this good. But I mean, it's well deserved. They're leading baseball amongst relief pitchers in FIP. They're at 3.45. That comes with a 3.49 ERA. So they're not really out pitching their estimators as well. So I think they also lead relief pitchers in F4. They're at 3.7, and that's more than any other team. They're 0.4 above the Reds and 0.7 above the Mariners. And then they're a full point of war ahead of the Rockies, who are fourth in F4. What? All right. Maybe we shouldn't trust that stat.
Yeah.
But anyway, they got the FIP. And this bullpen is pretty stacked, especially at the top. Batista and Cano have been two of the best relievers in baseball this year.
Yeah. Like you said, you both have number 3, the Atlanta Braves. We've said enough about them throughout this season. We don't need to add too much more. Raisel Iglesias, we expect to bounce back. AJ Minter's very good. They've gotten bounce back seasons from guys like Jesse Chavez and Nick Anderson. They just have so many options that it's another team. There's a reason why they are constantly NL favorites or very close to it. It's that they have a great bullpen, a lot of guys you can go to, so not too much to argue there. The fun part comes in here where at number 4, not only do you guys have different teams, Rick has one that Jake doesn't have even in his top 10. Jake has one that Rick doesn't even have in his top 10. They both have him at number 4 in their power rankings. So I'll just read them off and then you guys can make your case. Rick, you chose the Chicago White Sox. Jake, I'm already leaning away. You chose my New York Yankees. So Rick, you're going to do a lot of persuading to make me agree with you. But let's hear your cases for both those teams.
I mean, I'm just looking at this White Sox bullpen. I think I know the team isn't good right now, but this bullpen is just like, I mean, if Hendricks can get going, if we get like the Liam Hendricks of past, and I just think that top to bottom, this is the maybe, you know, one of the more deep bullpens in baseball with the way Joe Kelly has been throwing the ball. He's up there in the top of a lot of stats. I know we were really high on Ronaldo Lopez to start the year, and he definitely had some struggles in April, but he's been pitching a lot better lately. Maybe settling. He's just maybe more suited for a middle relief role, but he's still, you know, velocities in the 99 to 100 range. Keenan Middleton's having an absolute breakout year. 1.33 ERA over 20 innings. He's got a 34% K rate. He's again in the top 10 leaderboards for a lot of stats. You know, Gregory Santos is a name that was kind of interesting when he was in San Francisco for a while. He, you know, big velo guy. He's got a 2.12 ERA over 29 innings and gets a lot of ground balls with a sinker. And then the two lefties in the bullpen who have not pitched well, but, like, you know, these are two household names in Aaron Bummer and Garrett Crochet. Bummer's been pitching a little bit better lately. Crochet is still, you know, he's working his way back from Tommy John, but if those two guys get it going too, that bullpen can be really, really, I didn't even mention, yeah, Kendall Graveman too has been a little bit under the radar this year. I know he's got a, you know, pretty concerning xFIP I talked about today in the holdup, but he's still pitching well, and that's a 2.45 ERA. So I think that this can be a really good bullpen the strength for this team if they are to make some sort of playoff run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get all your points on this. I think they have all the name value and they have guys with great stuff. It just hasn't turned into successful pitching this year. I mentioned the FIP leaderboard that the Orioles were leading. The White Sox are fourth to last in baseball. Same with an ERA. Actually, they're third to last in baseball in FIP and they're fourth to last in ERA. So they have pitched really poorly despite some standout performances from Middleton, some solid pitching from Graveman, and a quiet breakout year from Santos. But I mean, like, Aaron Bummer has a 7.7 ERA. Lopez is over 5. I mean, Hendricks has pitched just 4 innings, but his ERA is over 6. And then even like the peripheral guys like Crochet, he's got an ERA over 5. That's different if it's like in the 4 range, like for Joe Kelly, who I think is going to turn it around in general. But I mean, that's a lot of struggling guys that just have the name there.
It's a big projection. I'm dreaming a little bit here, but just, yeah, it's a bit of the names and just some positive signs from guys like Reynaldo and Bummer recently. And, you know, hopefully Hendricks can get back to being himself. And you know, Joe Kelly keeps getting, he has some of the worst luck in baseball, but which eventually you got to wonder if it's not necessarily just bad luck. Maybe there's something else, but if Kelly can get that ERA down a little bit, there's a lot of interesting pieces here. I think it's from a ceiling perspective, it's got to be up there with the top four.
No, and I love this bullpen. I love all the guys in this bullpen. These are super appealing guys in terms of fantasy and stuff. And I think I would have probably ranked them top 10 if I didn't go to those leaderboards at all. Because as soon as I saw them like 28th and FIP, I was like, oh no, I can't do it. The numbers don't back it up.
Mm. Yeah, they both belong in the top 10. I might even put the White Sox slightly ahead of the Yankees just for the household name value that the White Sox have compared to the Yankees, but let's not sleep on the Yankees, Rick. I think they don't have the big names, but you know, we've seen what Holmes can do. Well, King, Peralta, they got Canely back. There's just a lot of success for the Yankee bullpen.
What's Jake's Yankee pitch?
Sure. Yeah. a slider. Just kidding. they've got depth, and they've also got like that top three that's been really good. And also they were really good on the FIP leaderboard. I think in terms of FIP, they were 6th. And in terms of ERA, they're leading baseball by a wide margin. They're at 2.82 bullpen ERA. Next is 3.13 for the Guardians. Michael King has been incredible this year. Clay Holmes has turned things around over the last month or so. He's one of the better ground ball pitchers in baseball. And Wandy Peralta is quietly one of the better left-handed relief pitchers in baseball. Outside of that, there's not really any names that are super recognizable. And I think right now it's pretty clear the Yankees bullpen is not at full strength. And the fact that they've been this successful without all of the names that they have on the IL right now is pretty incredible. Ron Marinaccio's sort of there, and Albert Abreu's solid as well. I think it's just like the rest of that bullpen is just really solid and quietly so. Like, I don't think you can go and ask anybody on the street who Jimmy Cordero is and which team he pitches for, but he's got a 3.33 ERA and a 28% strikeout rate. That's definitely well above average in terms of relief pitchers. And that's like the last guy in their bullpen. So it's pretty cool to see that they have so many names here that aren't recognizable and are pitching pretty solid. And then they have that 1-2-3 of King, Holmes, and Peralta that can sort of be used in any situation that just makes them have so much success this year.
Yeah, I guess I get it. I think they're just very average. It's the injuries that hurt too. I mean, there's a lot of guys they're missing, and that could change things for me. But I just think they're like in that 12 to 15 range of just a little bit above average, average ish. I mean, no one with a 30% strikeout rate or higher. Holmes has been pitching better. King, except for today, has pitched well. I think Peralta's due for some regression moving forward.
don't dissuade my man, Monty Peralta.
And I know he's fun, but I some concerning thing. I mean, it's 26.6% CSW is not great. 14% walk rate. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, I think it's a good average bullpen with. Considering all the injuries, they've been able to piece things together and, you know, power through. But I don't think there's anything particularly special about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think both belong in the top 10, but both interesting cases. A lot of things to like there. 5 and 6 in your guys' ranks, same thing. They're the same. We don't have to go too in-depth into it. Cleveland and Philadelphia, we know it makes them good. We've gushed about them throughout the entire season. The depth in both of those pens, just a lot to like there. Number 7 for Jake was Seattle Mariners. He's also number 8 for Rick, so we don't have to really have too much debate with regards to them. But one team that, you know, we'll go through Rick's, and also Rick has at number 10 the Minnesota Twins, and Jake has at number 8 the Minnesota Twins. So some agreement on there, just a few spots. But the final two spots are kind of where they go. At 7 and 9, Rick has two teams, Miami Marlins and Toronto Blue Jays, while Jake has the Padres and the Arizona Diamondbacks. So same thing. We'll fight it out, see who really belongs out there.
I'll start with the Marlins because I'll be honest, I don't have a ton of backing me up here. I just see a lot of Marlins guys moving up the ranks because they've been pitching so well lately. I mean, mm-hmm. Tanner Scott's in the middle of one of his best streaks I've ever seen from him. He's striking out everybody, not walking too many people. That's always been the big thing with Scott. I think, yeah, if you look at just the lefties in this bullpen, I mean, AJ Puck, Tanner Scott, Steven Okert, and Andrew Nardi, those are four guys who are just, you know, huge strikeout guys. Maybe Puck's probably the least of the four. I mean, Nardi has been pitching really well lately. He's kind of a name, you know, relief prospect as far as, you know, relief prospects go. He was kind of a big deal, so good to see him pitching well. And then Okert's just striking out everybody in the world, and Scott's being consistent. And then, you know, Dylan Floro had a little bit of, you know, he had a rough patch last week, but, you know, he's not going to strike out anyone, but he is typically consistent, and, you know, he's able to give them solid innings, get outs for them. He should be a fine holds option for them. And, you know, Brazoban's kind of the wild card. He has really good stuff. His you know, Statcast page can pop off the charts sometimes with, you know, pitch movement and whatnot. But he's been, you know, a little all over the place. So if he can be consistent, and then, you know, if you get something from JT Chargot, is typically I liked him a little bit on the Rays. Again, not a big strikeout guy, but a solid, you know, middle relief option for them. So I think just, you know, front to back, they're really solid, and those lefties though are just the best left-handed group. And I thought that the Arizona Diamondbacks had a good group of lefties. I think this tops them.
Yeah, you definitely made some good points. I considered the Marlins. I think once you get towards the end of this top 10, I feel the top 6 is pretty clear, and then outside of there, or maybe top 7 or so with Seattle in there, I think it gets sort of interesting to see sort of who you prefer. But I think it's a fair case. Maybe if we're doing just a lefty bullpen, then they have it there, because I don't really like Dylan Floro.
They need a righty.
Sort of. yeah, yeah. Brazoban's sort of a mixed bag, and I don't know about JT Chargois at this point, but yeah, I think if we're doing just lefties here, they take the cake in that department, but I don't know why I didn't include them. I think they could have been like 9 or 10 for me. I sort of struggled to figure out the last two there, but you definitely made a case for them. That's understandable.
Yeah. And then, we'll go with you, Jake, to you and let you wrap up the Blue Jays after, but you have the Padres and the Diamondbacks in your top 10. And I'll say for sure, the Diamondbacks are the one that really stood out for me as, seeing that a little puzzled. I know they seem to be that team that, you know, they have good arms, but a lot of talk we've had all season is who Vec's closing games on, because it seems like nobody really takes that job and runs with it.
Yeah, and I think just that whole discussion around who's going to be the closer sort of makes the team look worse than it actually is, right? Because it's like, oh, we don't have a closer, and that just makes them not as fantasy, not as enticing in a fantasy department, you know? Because they have so many, the fact that they have so many options that they can't decide who is going to be the closer, I think suggests that it's a really good bullpen. I mean, Miguel Castro is probably not going to keep up this level with his strikeout rate as low as it is, but he's been really good. Chafin is doing incredibly this year. Scott McGuff quietly coming back and looking really interesting.
He's been really good lately. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think like even Kyle Nelson's quietly having an incredible year. Austin Adams coming out of nowhere and looking really good. And then even the back end, like, or front end, I don't know how that works. Kevin Ginkle's good, and Dre Jameson can go multiple innings. And and that's not even mentioning All-Star Joe Mantiply and All-Star Mark Melanson. so I think it's a very quietly good bullpen that has this connotation of being a bad bullpen because we don't know who the closer is.
Yeah, and if Austin Adams can be healthy for them, that's another nice piece, that, you know, big-time slider guy who can rack up strikeouts. I had them 12th. I was like 20. They were in the mix for me just because of the depth. You know, and yeah, like you say, Mantiply, who could be back soon. I think he's working his way back, unless he's had another setback. Yeah, that's a very interesting bullpen.
Yeah, I would agree. We'll wrap up, let you guys make the case for the final two teams: Rick, the Toronto Blue Jays, and Jake, the San Diego Padres.
Toronto is definitely a top-heavy bullpen here. It's really their top five guys are the only ones I'm interested in. Romano, and you know, I think Romano might be a little bit of an overrated closer, but he still belongs in that, you know, top 10 closer rank, or the top 10 closer list. Eric Swanson's been one of the best setup men in baseball this year, and they did really well in that trade. Everyone kind of gave them, some looks for making that trade. It's kind of seemed weird trading an all-star outfielder for a middle reliever, but hey, it's worked out for them. Nate Pearson's kind of settling into a good reliever himself. He's, you know, we know that he's got elite velocity. He's got good stuff. It's just, you know, he was able to, you know, the command's always going to be an issue for him. Tim Mayza, good lefty. I mean, he's got a 1.69 ERA on the year, and the strikeout rate's not high, but he does do a good job, you know, limiting hard contact. And I think he was in the top 15 for, I think it was XFIP when we were doing that last week. So that's an interesting name. And then Trevor Richards getting a ton of strikeouts with the 36.5% strikeout rate on the year. He's, you know, another starter turn reliever. He's got a big time change up that's getting a ton of strikeouts for him. So I really like that top five. It's sneaky good. I think that's going to be a big factor if the Blue Jays want to, you know, stick in this AL East race.
Yeah, they may be able to clean up a mess on the bases, but they can't clean up popcorn on an airplane.
Well,
well done. So well good. Done.
So yeah. Well, yeah. He might
That's
not
my
be.
Only argument. It's my only argument.
I didn't know where you're going at first with that, but it was worth it. It was definitely worth it.
I don't think he's going to be on this team much longer.
I heard he's catching the first pitch. Yeah. Pride Day, which makes no sense to me, but we don't have to dwell on that.
I did think that was a joke when I saw it. I thought that was someone.
I also thought real. It was a joke. I still think it's a joke.
But I mean, if Chad, I don't think Chad Green's going to be back this year, but they got, you know, Zach Pop. They have other guys in the minors who could come up. He hasn't pitched well, and neither is Yimi Garcia. Those two guys that came over from Miami have really, really struggled for them. If then, you know, that's, you know, hurt, that's what hurts this bullpen.
Yeah. You make some great points. I love that top five there. For the Padres, there's not much to say. They have like the best closer in baseball. They have a couple of guys that can set up pretty well. They're top three in bullpen ERA this year. And that's pretty much the extent of it. I think they have pretty good depth as well because they have unknown guys like Tom Cosgrove with a zero ERA through 13 innings. So I think it's not a super flashy bullpen, but with Hader and then a good relief core of guys, especially if you have Luis Garcia not injured, you got a pretty good relief core there.
Yeah, those guys on the IL really hurt. Luis Garcia, Drew Pomeranz, Robert Suarez. With that, this is definitely a top, you know, five possibly bullpen.
I keep forgetting that Drew Pomeranz is around just because of how little he's pitched recently. Yeah. But just remember the good days, and it's like, shoot, they still have him to, you know, help this pennant hopefully some point this season. So yeah, it'd be nice if they can turn things around. It's baseball is definitely fun when the Padres are playing well. Who had the better ranks? Sound off in our comments on Twitter as always. You'll get some votes out there. See whose rankings you agree with most. But we'll take one final break, end up with some mailbag, answer some of the questions from our Discord, and hopefully get to a quick section of Who's That Closer. All right, it's time for a mailbag. As always, if you want to get in on the mailbag, ask us some questions, besides hitting us up on Twitter, as we do at the end of the show, you can join our Discord. Go to pitcherless.com, get PL Plus. We have the Discord community where you can answer all our questions to our analysts. You can talk about anything and everything, baseball, life, whatever. It's a great community. I can't highly recommend it enough, but we referenced this at the beginning of the show. We got a question from Little Piranha. With Chapman and Barlow currently on the trade block, he recommends, who do you think Carlos Hernandez is the favorite to be the Royals closer? So what do you think of Hernandez? And if it's not him, who do you guys think is the guy you'd maybe want to keep on your watch list for the Royals at this point?
I would love to see that. I would love to see Hernandez get a chance, but I feel like it's going to probably go to like Taylor Clark. This Hernandez has had some weird, I mean, they like to use him as an opener a lot. And you know, the strikeout rate's been good. The velocity's crazy. It's gone up till he's throwing 100 consistently, but I think they trust Taylor Clark a lot, and he's been pitching pretty well, you know, ERA under 3, and he has 8 holds on the year. So I think Clark would be the next man up.
Yeah, the holds are sort of the deciding factor there. There's probably some correlation between like current number of holds and who the future closer is when a closer hits the IL or is traded. So he's got 8-3 lead over Hernandez in that department. Hernandez, though, has, I don't know, been up and down throughout the year. Though in his last 13 innings, he's got 19 strikeouts and no walks, which is very interesting. Not walking anybody, and that was one of the things that held him back as a starter. So right now he's got a 26% strikeout minus walk rate for the year, and that's pretty incredible. So I definitely love the skills there. Would love to see him be the closer, especially because that would be like an early call for us on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But it will really depend on who the manager decides on there.
Yeah, you know, I'll throw Josh Stalma as a name to kind of monitor out there. In the past, he was used kind of in a high leverage situation. We had originally fought, I believe it was last year, the question between him or Scott Barlow, who would lead the team to save. So it wouldn't shock me if they maybe try and work him back in that role. I know he hasn't been great this year, and similar to Hernandez, he's been used as an opener. It wouldn't shock me if they try and get him reacquainted to that role, since he has some sort of experience in the back end there. But I do agree with you. Clark seems to be the favorite, but I think the three of us would all like to see Carlos Hernandez, because we've mentioned him a lot. I know Nick was even a fan of him back when he was starting, just stuff-wise. Mm. Next question is from Josh Markstrom. What the heck do you do with Jorge Lopez? And I promise, he actually used heck, not any other word.
Well, you have to. He was on the Discord.
Yeah. That's true. It wasn't platted at that time.
I don't,
you drop him.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I guess it depends on if you're in a really deep holds league. I guess you can wait it out, but yeah, I don't I moved him out of the top 40, out of the top 50 in holds for my holds rankings today. I don't see any reason. Caleb Thielbar's back. I think he gets slept on a little bit. He's a really good reliever. I think he and Brock Stewart's listed as a setup man there now, and that's, you know, that checks out with how well he's been pitching. So, yeah, they have other options there too. And Moran, Griffin, Jax. I know Jax has struggled, but he's pitched a little bit better lately. So, yeah, I don't think there's any reason to hold on to Jorge Lopez at this point.
Yeah, me neither. I don't think they're going to be using him in too many save situations going forward. And if you sort of add on last year's second half fall off, I think that this year's lack of success sort of makes a lot of sense. He's got a strikeout minus walk rate that's 10% because he's striking at less than 20% of batter. So definitely a sort of really ugly season right now. His xFIP is even higher than his ERA right now, so he's getting lucky right now with a 4.5 ERA. I don't think he's going to be a guy that you want to own for the rest of the season.
Yep, I would agree. I don't think he's, you know, if you're a deeper league, of course hold on to him, but if you're a shallow league, I don't think he's really worth holding on to. Final question is from Justin Redler. Considering the Angels, is Ben Joyce destined to become the Angels closer or become a high leverage reliever / fireman?
I obviously there's a lot of potential with Joyce. I don't know if he's going to be a setup guy or high leverage reliever for them just yet. Again, there's definitely issues there with walk rates, and You know, Chris Devinsky's definitely earned the top setup role. He's pitched really well. It's been a great find for them. And, you know, he's just throwing his changeup a lot more now. And why not? It's always been a good pitch for him. And then when Matt Moore gets back, he'll probably be the secondary setup guy there. So I don't know. Joyce, I guess, could be the third, could be that next option. But I think it's, you know, they got to see some more consistency from him. I think even, you know, Sam Bachman's probably been pitching, but he's looked better than him so far this year. That's another interesting rookie that they have. So, you know, I might pump the brakes on the Joyce hype a little bit right now and just, you know, see a little consistency from him. I don't think there's any reason to get to dive in if you're in shallow leagues right now.
Mm-hmm. Is he destined to be the Angels closer? I think yes. This year, probably not. Just the way with Esteves pitching, the way that Esteves is having so much success right now, there's literally no reason to remove him from that role. That would sort of be pretty counterintuitive if you're trying to win ball games right now. They're over 500, so they're getting off to a pretty good start. I would guess that they wouldn't want to switch things up where things are going well.
Yeah, we don't talk a lot of dynasty on the show because it's relievers. You don't really have to talk about dynasty, but like Jake said, he's destined to be a closer, just maybe not in 2023. I think stuff-wise, he's going to be fantasy viable for years to come, if not as a closer, as a high-leverage guy. But like Jake's, or like Rick said, there's a lot of guys in that pen who they signed. You know, can't forget about Ryan DePera. Maybe we're finding his way back at some point. Matt Moore coming back. You know, it's a number of bullpen doesn't have the full flashy names, but it's been pretty consistent, pretty solid so far this season. So he'll play in the role, but maybe not until 2024 at this point. But we do have a hard stop tonight. Jake has some plans that don't include us, so we're not going to get, we don't want to rush an edition of Who's That Closer. So we'll save that for next week. But before we wrap up, as always, guys, plug where you can find on Twitter. It's been a little bit since we've been back together. So, and any other work you are currently going through.
Nothing, just the typical closer ranks and holds ranks and save plus hold ranks, for me. Yeah, that's about it.
All right. Yeah. And you can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. Typical things for me, First Pitch Podcast, my personal podcast, Free Baseball, reliever ranks articles, one-off articles. All my stuff can be found on crumplerbaseball.com if you're inclined to, dive into the world of Jake Crumpler.
And you can find me at Callen_Elslager. Just hosting this pod. Nothing else really too exciting. No full articles, but hanging out in the Discord, chatting up with our community. And you can find the show at In the Pen Pod. We'd appreciate the support. Be sure to hit us up if you have any questions, you know, mailbag questions. You want to chime in terms of our power rankings or any other information, just want to chat relievers. We're happy to answer any questions and have any further discussions you may want. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. As always, you can be be sure to leave us a rating. We don't really talk about that enough, but be sure to leave us or the Pitchless Podcast Network a rating on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you listen to your podcast. It would really help us and the network moving forward. So we'll catch you all next week and dive into some more relievers in the world of bullpens.